This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:48 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana with Philip. There's no ignoring Malaysia's demographic trajectory towards an aging nation, a fact that economists have long warned about. According to the World Bank, more than 20% of the Malaysian population will be older than 65 by 2056. That's up from 7% in 2020. Without systemic intervention, the economic impact of an aging population will be significant, affecting productivity levels as well as pressure on public spending programs like healthcare and pensions.
At the same time, it also opens opportunities for economic growth, with a whole industry needed to cater to the demands of an older generation. Hence, it's noteworthy that the government intends to table a senior citizens bill in Parliament next year, according to the Deputy Minister of Women, Family and Community Development, Aiman Athira Sabu. Now, the Deputy Minister said the proposed legislation will include measures to protect the welfare of the elderly and create a strong support system for senior citizens and carers. So how should this critical policy be shaped to provide both social protection and economic opportunities?
For some thoughts on this, we have on the line with us PC Gan, Country Manager of Homage Malaysia. PC, good morning. Thank you very much for joining us. Let's start off with just getting a big picture of what you're seeing. Help us put into context the policy concerns that arise with an aging society like we're seeing in Malaysia.
Hi, good morning, guys. So I think instead of answering this directly, let me just give you a very good example of what's happening here in Malaysia when you're operating a nursing home, right? So I think to obtain a license itself, it's quite cumbersome. From getting permit from the Minister of Women, Family and Community Development to getting a local council, like a DBKL license, and even getting a Bomba's approval. Now, with the amount of red tape and unclear guidelines, I think there are close to 60% of the nursing homes that's operating in Malaysia right now that is unlicensed. So if you take a look at also the DOSM, the Statistics Malaysia Department, right? So 7.3% is the aged population. So that's 2.4 million of elderly. With the longer life expectancy, I am doubtful that our public healthcare is ready. So now, even prior to COVID, we saw that there's this huge brain drain that's happening, especially in the healthcare sector. With our healthcare professionals, or the shortage of them, we can't even support the entire Malaysia when we got into pandemic. So let alone just taking care of when we don't have pandemic, right? Mm. Now then, if you look at the public healthcare system, who are those that truly needs them? Assuming I remove the T20, so you just look at the B40s and the M40s, right? And that's about 80%. It's close to 2 million of these elderly care that needs public healthcare as they age. And we are already hearing, I think we see in a recent newspaper that there are also children abandoning them at the hospitals and nursing homes. So I think with that in itself, we know that the healthcare space, we really don't have a sufficient space for them. Then the next point is I would like to touch on, which is the employment portion. Mm. So retirement age, although it's at 60, that's fairly young, and I would think it's an able age. My dad is 74 this year. My mom is 70. Both able and independent. Mm. But now, how do I get them to encourage them to earn simple wage, just not to sustain their living expenses, but to be relevant to the society? And that also helps to curb a lot of diseases. So now with that, right, they are somewhat self-sufficient and they don't really need to rely on one, public healthcare, and two, perhaps even their children. So I think to sum it up, right, it's actually just three big portions that I think we can work concurrently in regards to policies, which is the infrastructure, right, to help with this aging nation. It's rather murky right now. Mm. And the second one, which is the country in debt, I think the budget that's being allocated to public welfare and healthcare, I don't think it's sufficient.
Yeah.
And the last piece is that a platform to encourage these elderly who are still able to help them, you know, just purely based on wellness and independence.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for framing that very nicely. I guess the question I have, PC, is that, look, in our neighbourhoods, we see, you know, old folks' home flourishing everywhere. The T20 is, I guess, less of a problem, but we're going to see a crisis at the B40 level, isn't it? Because that's where also, you know, the younger generation can't even afford to support the elderly care. So what kind of policy prescriptions do you recommend, besides just only funding, needed to support especially the B40, which in my view is an upcoming crisis?
Yeah, so because HomeAge operates in the two other countries like Singapore and Australia, so there are a lot of things that we can learn from them, especially when it comes to our EPF, the way that it's being managed, the way that it's being dispersed at the moment. So I think right now it's one whole lump sum that's given. But based on what I see, a lot of these parents, what they do is that they use this money in hopes that, you know, if they give it to their children, they will help to manage it for them.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I think that there's a lot more around the retirement funds, which is... Right. Our own savings that we can work on.
Mm. Yeah. So I mean, that's, I think the funding of what's going to happen post-retirement is one thing. I was struck by what you mentioned about the healthcare professionals that are needed in order to cater to this growing aging population. How is elderly care work viewed as an occupation at the moment, a PC? I mean, what's the workforce situation like? Are we going to need to create a pipeline of industry professionals that can work in this field?
Yeah, so I think it's a very sad and gloomy view when it comes to elderly care work. Mm. I think oftentimes people look at it as quite a lowly and unrespected job. On top of that, I think purely from our caregivers' experiences, oftentimes they are misunderstood or even treated as a domestic helper or like maids. So I think in that perspective, because there's the lack of respect for this profession, it's a question of, is it even called a profession, right? Mm. And with that, then it's that ripple effect of, then I do not want to take up this seemingly noble job, but at the same time being treated not much of respect, you know, but again, it's so much needed. On our platform, we have got close to about 2,000 of them. But even when we have 2,000 over caregivers, it's only a few active ones, whether if it's beaten by the burnout or if not, then it's the wage or also the last piece, which is very basic, but still important, which is the respect.
MPC, I'd like to pose a question to you, which I think many of our listeners will resonate with. How do you address the stigma that is sometimes attached to sending one's parents to aged care homes? Because there's this whole expectation, right, that, you know, they've looked after us when we were young, so in return we should reciprocate. But there's a bit of this tension taking place, isn't it? How do we address this really difficult conversations then?
Yeah, so this whole filial piety is still big. It's still big with Asians. It makes it very difficult if the loved one is not well and is dependent. So oftentimes, even for me personally, it is a last resort. And to many, if not all, it will be the last resort. So people will always look at, okay, if I can still house my parents, I will. And when I will, and if they are semi-dependent, I would then need to look for external help. So oftentimes people look at external help to come to homes to take care of them first, before even considering sending them to the aged care homes, right? But now the thing is, now when a senior or when a loved one is fully dependent and you need a 24/7 monitoring, close monitoring, right? Or if a loved one who have fell before, that's where you need close monitoring. You need people to always be there for them. Yeah, and this is just physically dependent. We have not talked about dementia or anything of that sort, which requires even more monitoring and care help, right? So, and I guess that's where it really pushes the children to consider a nursing home or sending them to a care home. Now, in terms of the stigma, I think it's always the circumstance that will push them to that extent when they themselves are pretty much burnt out, stressed, and if their jobs or their family's well-being is at stake. So I think with that, we should actually push out more awareness on, I know it's been a lot talked about self-care and mental wellness, but I think it's also important to know that sometimes it starts from within. If we are not well enough, then how then do we care for parents or even our own children? So I think there's this whole balance between the seniors and giving back to what they have, helped us with, and also paying it forward and, bringing up our children.
Right. PC, thank you so much for speaking to us today. That was PC Gan, country manager of OMIG Malaysia, talking about what she'd like to see the senior citizens bill address. A lot of policy issues that she encapsulated there. It's a very complex but very important issue for policymakers to look at. We'll be discussing this further, I'm sure. 7:59 in the morning. We're heading into the 8 a.m. news bulletin. And then after that, on the breakfast grill, Philip C. is going to be speaking to Ben Bland, Director of Asia Pacific of Chatham House. Stay tuned for that, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.